You're listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Lintonmeyer. This is a special end-of-year holiday sort of episode where you get to meet my audio editor for this podcast for the last year, Roger Heathers. In fact, it was my first meeting over Zoom with this British gentleman, and that pretty warm holiday music you're hearing right now is a song called Guard Dogs from his upcoming music release, Upward Spiral. Because, of course, somebody who edits podcasts is a musician and also a podcaster. So we're going to learn a little bit about his show, The Weekly Song Podcast, and we talk musician to musician a little bit, but this is mostly a peek behind the curtain into Nakedly Examined Music, where I get to talk with somebody who I know has listened to all the episodes from last year. So we get a little into the technical stuff behind podcast production, how I select guests, some of the unique challenges that guests this year posed, and a lot of other stuff. Roger is a charming guy. I'm so happy to have him working on the show, and I'm so happy to have you here listening to the show. The headquarters for this podcast is nakedlyexaminedmusic.com. As always, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. Let's go to the discussion. Hello, I'm here with Roger. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Mark, how's it going? Pretty good.
So this is our first time speaking, despite the fact that we've been working together nearly a year.
That is correct. It's kind of strange. I was thinking about this before we jumped on. Like, we've spoken loads of times. I've heard your voice for hours at a time, having edited your shows. But it's almost a kind of parasocial relationship in a way where I'm now meeting you face to face. So it's nice to meet you.
Well, and I didn't know until this week. I, you know, should have at least searched your name. I assumed if you had, you know, I knew you were a musician, that if you had things out, it would be some band name. But no, just search Roger Heathers on Bandcamp, on the streaming services, and there are many albums.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I think you can relate to this because you put out music under your own name. And like, there is the temptation, isn't there, to be like a kind of Sun Kill Moon or whatever, like project name for a solo thing. But I mean, sometimes your own name just works just fine.
Or at least the fake name that I picked at some time when I thought that having a hard to spell name mattered. Now I'm saying it constantly to the people, such that having a shortened name, Mark Lint, is of no real advantage.
Right, sure. Yeah, Lintonmeyer is one where I imagine you get people asking you how to spell it, so Heathers is a little easier.
Yes, and I do have, right before the podcasting thing kicked in, or as before it had become the thing it is now, I played under the name New People, so those are the only three albums that are not, you can't find in the unified space. Everything else I backdated. My college band, I have like, well, the songs I wrote are featuring Mark Lint. So you could still find them in the, you know, appears on, but the New People ones, I just had to create a playlist of my own music and move the things into it with the other names.
Yeah, the multiple project thing is tricky. I haven't checked out. I've actually listened to some of your music on your Bandcamp. I really like it. I just haven't heard the New People stuff. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, that was the Power Trio. So I was a co-frontman. So were you in a band before you started releasing solo things?
Well, I've been in like a ton of different bands, but the thing that's always been like a constant for me is like home recording. You know, the thing of, you know, you write the songs yourself and then you're like, I could ask friends, and sometimes I do ask friends to contribute to you know, parts, bass parts, drum parts, but I can kind of play all the stuff I need to play well enough to kind of get my ideas across. So I've always opted towards the thing of like, just let me just try and do it myself. Like I get a kick out of multi-tracking anyway. So,
and what city are you actually in?
Well, I'm in Devon, which is a county in the southwest of the UK. If you're familiar with Cornwall at all, it's like the county up from Cornwall.
Is there a big music scene where you are, or you would have to, like, how many hours are you from London, say, or from the nearest hub?
Sure. So I'm about 5 hours from London. Then Bristol is about 2 hours away. Where I am right now, there's just nothing. So I've kind of like resigned myself to the thing of like, the internet's great. The internet is a place for music, you know, and you can find like-minded people through algorithms and that sort of thing. So, you know, I do a lot of stuff online, but as far as a scene around here, there's really, it's minimal. How about where you are?
Madison has a reasonably good music scene. I feel like I've perhaps aged out of it, that my latest attempt to get a band together a couple years ago was hooking back up with people that I was already familiar with and friends of friends, with a few that I got through ads and things, but I just haven't had a lot of great luck. So as that, it was up to an 8-piece for a little bit. We recorded a demo, was my last recording, finished recording, I should say. And then the guy who I had started that with, the bass player who I'd played with 20 years ago, decided that he didn't have time for it. And it sort of whittled down from there. So now it's down to three of us who recorded the greater part of an album this summer. Should have been released around now, but is still awaiting some overdubs. I'm putting bass on myself, which is fine. That was my original instrument, but I had hoped to have a bass, have it built up at least to a quartet, but I'm having trouble in the Madison scene, even finding a bass player that wants to do what I want to do. So yes, I think there are a lot of musicians, but whether they're enough that, I don't know, how do you feel as a songwriter pushing your music on people? I'm not sure. Obviously, you know, your music is appealing. It is catchy, but I find it at least was easier as a younger person in my 20s and 30s to find either other singer-songwriters who, you know, wanted to blend their style with mine, or who saw the possibility like, oh, these are catchy enough. This might become something. Let me jump on that train and be on it for a couple years until it's clear that it's not going to become something. You're not going to be touring the country. Yeah. So what's your story in terms of other people like that? Obviously, you know, you can always get a friend to come over for the afternoon, or, you know, it's ideal at this age, so I'm over 50. So it should just be, this is our leisure time activity. This is what, you know, so it's a matter of finding people who want to do that kind of thing with no pressure.
That's a really good point. I know exactly what you're saying with having the 8-piece band, and it kind of like people going, oh, I can't do this anymore, or commitments, or even if it's just time commitments, I think that can be a factor. But also there's kind of, I mean, you know how it is, people's egos get involved with certain ensemble activities and stuff. For me, like I said, I've always kind of gone back to the just me recording thing. I have projects with other people, but they're always a little bit more casual, because when you're recording by yourself, you don't have to worry about treading on anyone's toes or anything like that. So for me, it's always just been a case of, I'll have people over and do things like in little pockets, like, hey, do you want to come over and do some backing vocals together? It's just a fun way to spend an afternoon, you know? Whereas like, if you kind of get into a project with someone, you're like, okay, you write songs, I write songs, let's try and make this into a thing. For one, like I said, there's not a great deal of a scene around here to really kind of like plug yourself into. But also just, I like recording so much that it just always comes back to that. And, you know, you can record yourself as like a solo acoustic singer-songwriter, or you can sound like, you know, a la Todd Rundgren, who I know you've mentioned on the show before, do all the parts yourself and have it sound like, you know, like an 8-piece band, you know.
Yes, it is great that you are in a mode that you feel comfortable doing that. I'm now spending enough time on podcasts that it is hard for me to get back in the space that I was in even like 2012, where, okay, I can, let me set up all the drum mics. Let me, now it's just, you know, okay, there's an more immediate thing that I should do in terms of posting this thing, such that I've just gotten back with this new project into using my DAW, into using Cubase, which part of that is I got a new computer and now it actually boots up in a reasonable amount of time, whereas before it was like a full minute. And plus I still have to find the dongle.
Right, sure.
It's not normally plugged in because I don't have enough USB spaces. Like I can't have the dongle and the camera in at the same time. But for folks that don't know that these companies are so used to being pirated, and I did use pirated software back in the day, but sure. I'm completely off that at this point. But yes, there's a physical piece of hardware that you have to plug into a USB slot for it to recognize, and there's always, at least for me, there's always something wrong with the licensing that it's like, even though it's working, it's saying that, oh, well, you can't use this plugin because something legally is not activated. So yes, just an extra thing to deaden the inertia that you might feel of getting up in the morning and like, I'm going to record another part on my piece.
I feel like this rare relatability that I have with you is that we both spend a lot of our days, a lot of our hours to do with podcasts. Me more on the editing side. I do have a podcast as well, but you do hosting many, many different podcasts.
What is your show? Tell them about your show.
Oh, it's called The Weekly Song Podcast, and it's where we write a song a week and we talk about how we wrote them, which it makes me think of how Nakedly Examined Music is a show about music that has a great like core factor to it, like a spine to it, you know, which is that you're talking about not just music generally, but you have like a core thing you're talking about. And it's the same with our show, where we have like, okay, this is how we wrote the songs and that sort of thing. So there's a little bit more of a hook. So
it's just you and Declan actually together writing a song each week. Or no, or you bring in something.
We each bring in a song. So there's two songs per show. And then it's like a surprise to each other. Like, oh, you did this. Oh, I did that. And we just kind of explain it to each other for the first time live on air sort of thing.
Well, that is exciting. Yes, I generally pride myself on being so prepared for these pod. And of course, I should have assumed that you had a podcast to get into podcast editing. Yes, say a little bit about how, I mean, it is rather a miracle that we are talking, or that you are editing my show, because it was just a cold, you know, I had my current editor, who was a listener to the Partially Examined Life. Let me just give the history for people. I started out editing myself, and then I would very quickly made my co-hosts on Partially Examined Life each take a piece. I would send it out to them, edit your piece. And that was nice to do at least once or twice, so they could hear how terrible their speaking styles were. Oh, maybe I should say And I wish I could just keep doing that. I don't say anything about that anymore. I feel like I want them to just be energized about doing the show, and we'll just pick up the slack, because I think it's a very difficult thing to improve on. I think that I've tried to make a concentrated effort over the years to speak a little more smoothly, say less, because I'm just very aware of, you know, I'm going to have to edit this, or I'm going to do a pass. Somebody's going to do a pass on it, but I wouldn't necessarily inflict that on others, or I don't understand how others work on that. Yeah. How much do you edit your own show? Let me ask you that.
Well, so I'll do the audio edit for my show, and Declan will do the video edit for his show. Editing that audio was the way I got into podcast editing in general. I remember I was editing that, and I was looking for trying to get out of like service industry work. And this was like 7 years ago, something like that. And I edit podcasts on Fiverr. I edited my own podcast. I then got asked to edit, you know, someone else's on Fiverr. And then I had two shows, my shows and somebody else's. And then it just kind of built up over the years. But I think to comment on what you were saying about saying yourself and trying to kind of get other people not to, it's such a tough thing to do, I find, because people often aren't aware of their speech patterns. Like, they will say like and like I have done a couple of times, and they
moderation
won't be aware
is fine.
Of it. Exactly. Sure. But like, people won't be aware. So you could say to somebody, hey, do you mind not doing this? And either they'll be offended because it's part of their like personality, or they'll be like, I didn't even know I did it. So.
Know what I'm saying?
No, I'm saying.
On the music podcast, we've had some, you know, junkies. Any of the, within the last year that you had to deal with. So, well, yes. To continue on the story of getting this to you, then we had volunteers among the Partially Examined Life listening that would take 10, 15, 20 minutes. And we were making enough money. We were doing the supporter thing that I was able to pay them a little bit, like $1 per raw minute, but I would do the mixing. So I would give them part of a stereo file, and I would tell, you know, do not change the volume on this. Do not change the compression. Do not change anything, because it still has to stack up next to the other five people that are working on this episode. Eventually, one of the guys, Tyler, who has been on Audible on this show before, or on my various shows, said, you should just pay me to do the whole thing. This is what I want to be doing. So he took that on all of my shows for a number of years until he burned out and like, I need to not do this anymore. So I was very quickly having to find. So I just went through some pitches that I had gotten over the years. And one was from your Daniel, your compatriot, who... Do you know how he was picking shows to email? Was he just, there are a million shows. Like, how would you know even who to approach?
Well, I've got to be honest. I mean, I work at the Podcast Doctors, which is like the agency which does Nakedly Examined Music and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, obviously I've spoken to Daniel and Johnny, who work at the Podcast Doctors, but I don't know really their way of working. I mean, I live in the UK, they live in the US. Like, we've spoken, but like, I don't really know really their way of working too much.
How did you even connect with them?
I sent them an email. This was like around the Fiverr days, when I was just kind of putting myself on Fiverr as a podcast editor. and just kind of honing and getting tighter as an editor and stuff like that. And I just emailed them saying, hey, here's my portfolio. You know, I would love to work with you. Didn't expect to hear anything back. And they said, yeah, we're actually looking for somebody at the moment, and took me on.
I almost feel like I get so many solicitations for various things that if someone is reaching out to me, it almost has to be a scam or like so many people that want to create TikTok clips of what. And I know there are these sort of services and they're probably sending to a million podcasts. And so there's no, you know, I've even gotten, this is actually more in the guest pitching area, that people are starting to use AI now to like look at your recent episode and try to say something in the email that like, oh, I saw you had this discussion about empathy. And so I really think that this person I'm representing who tells people how to grow their companies in record time would be perfect for you. Like, not this attempt just makes you look worse. This does not show that you're a fan of the show or something, but that is almost what I require and what was good about, you know, the initial editors that I had. So I have to hand it to you that I finally feel with Nakedly Examined Music that I don't necessarily have to listen to the whole thing on my pass, that I trust you enough that the clips that we pull are going to be the right ones. I was having to fix them about half the time because maybe I wasn't being clear enough or something. Yeah, so thank you.
Oh, 100%. Honestly, that's really affirming to hear. I mean, I think I've landed in a really fortuitous position too with editing for Nakedly Examined Music because I really like the music on the show. And I think that's kind of an important thing. And you can kind of edit any type of show, but I feel lucky working with you in general because I like all of your shows. And of course I would say that, but I'm not just trying to blow smoke because we're talking.
You don't have to.
No, sure. I mean, I don't have to, but I mean, you talk about music and you talk about philosophy and you talk about film and TV, which I like. I mean, you know, you covered a ton of shows on pretty much pop, which I enjoy. A lot of the albums on Nakedly Examined Music, I go away and listen to in my own time. So there's like, it's just such a good match, but it wasn't even like it was set up to be like that. It was just complete happenstance. And so, yeah, thanks for saying that. I appreciate that very much. As far as Nakedly Examined Music, is this the newest of the shows you do?
No, this was number two. So this is 2016 I launched. And then it was 2018 or 19 for Pretty Much Pop. And then a couple years after that. So we're in year five for Philosophy versus Improv. And then the one that you haven't heard because we didn't want to spend any more money on it is Close Reads, which is just me and Wes from Partially Examined Life that we started doing 2 or 3 years ago. But those, I don't use an editor and I try not to edit them. But this is the key one where, like, if I'm not going to edit them or I'm going to only edit them lightly, could you please say less? Could you please?
Sure.
But that's a hard conversation to have. Tell us about your before we get into talking more about sort of the year in review, which was the point of this. Mm. But the your process. So what DAW are you using? How are you? We talked to the musicians about how they do their studio antics. How is this? Is this the same procedures apart from adding reverb and things that you're using for your recording your songs?
So are we talking about podcast editing?
Yes. Yeah. What you do for Nakedly Examined Music, for instance.
Sure. So yeah, it's all edited in Logic. I use Logic to record and to edit. I think with DAWs, whatever you're using, it's just the one you're most comfortable with. And I've used Logic for donkey's years. So, you know, I'm just pretty quick with it. So I use Logic. You know, I have the Isotope suite. So if anything comes in and it's like really noisy from a guest or something, you can kind of clean that up and work the witchcraft that is in that software. And, you know.
So that's destructive editing, right, though? In other words, you're not just having it apply. Yeah, but the compression and things, I know, with the other shows, this is kind of a weird thing and maybe sort of at my request. I think the first thing you had sent back to me maybe was the levels were too low or they were somehow wonky. And so I kind of made a deal with Daniel at Podcast Doctors that you would edit the content, you would put but then he's actually putting the tracks together because he just had some quick way of doing it that seemed like it worked every time. I don't know, is this something you're advancing? Because what you do for Nakedly Examined Music, we decided we couldn't use that method for Nakedly Examined Music because of all the little song bits that come in. And so what are you going to have a separate track that somehow has those? I don't know. That just seems like it added to the complication. And we've had some back and forth still based on, okay, well, this overall one is too loud, this is too quiet, but it seems like you've hit the sweet spot. I don't know. Should we have you do, I don't know if this is appropriate for talking on the air. It seems like we at some point we should just skip the other step and have you submit me the final ones for the other podcasts.
I suppose so. I mean, with Nakedly Examined Music, of course, it's different. Like you say, there's the songs. There are the songs which are mastered to a certain level with a limiter and all that kind of stuff. So you don't want to be messing around with that. So the audio track is the speaking of the two or more participants is treated differently. But yeah, I mean, I think absolutely that is something that we could do going forward. It's different for every podcast. You know, every single podcast has a different level of spec and detail and all that kind of stuff. But absolutely, yeah, 100%.
Hey, let's stop for some sponsor messages. I want to talk about Rula. When you're feeling down, you don't have to talk to your audio editor. You can talk to a professional. If you go to the Rula website and answer some questions, they will hook you up with one of their over 15,000 carefully vetted, highly qualified, licensed therapists and psychiatrists. And since they partner with over 100 insurance plans, probably yours, the average copay for a therapy visit is only $15 per session. Sometimes it's $0. Most of us could use therapy. There have been many times in my life where I should have gotten therapy, but there were too many barriers. But with online therapy covered by your insurance, the barriers are minimal. Rula provides true end-to-end care. They're committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way on your mental health journey, not just finding you the right therapist and helping you schedule appointments right in the app, but monitoring your progress, supporting medication management. Thousands of people are already using Rula to get affordable, high-quality therapy that's actually covered by insurance. Visit rula.com/NEM to get started. After you sign up, you'll be asked how you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know we sent you. That's rula.com/NEM. You deserve mental health care that works for you, not against your budget. So am I the most anal that you have run across in terms of getting rid of all the ums and the... Oh, you're shaking your head. What?
No. I mean...
They're more demanding people?
I mean, first of all, you're lovely and you're not at all in any way bad like that. I mean, it's good for me as an editor to have exacting standards and to have somebody who's like, hey, look, we don't have repeated things here. We don't have this being repeated or extended or anything like that. So it's good for me. It makes me a better editor. That's what I want to be good at. So it's all good.
One more of the technical thing. Yeah. So when I edit now, and I, at this point, I'm only editing, I don't like to use my DAW. I just like to use SoundForge, which is what I'm recording in right now. Right now, I'm recording on one track and I have my sound card set up. So you, a backup of you is recording on the right-hand track. And that is in fact what I submit to you to edit. And usually the recording of you that I make is just the backup that we actually determined that the one that Zoom captures is still better. I'm not sure why that would be the case. But better than that is what we're doing right now, where you record yourself on your end. Very hard to get guests to actually do that.
Sure, which I always find is interesting with musicians, because you would have thought they'd have a microphone like right next to them the whole time, you know?
Maybe it depends on their age or how spoiled they were. Like if they were sort of just, oh, I've always been successful. And so I just go into the studio and I have money behind me. And then, but those are the people that then... maybe their label dries up and then they don't record anything for a bunch of years because they're just, we're used to having some sort of support that now they're not getting. Whereas if you've always been just a self-starter, I record everything myself, then it's just a matter of your will, of if you want to keep doing it.
Well, it's exactly, it's almost like a kind of, I don't know what it is, pre-90s and post-90s ethos or philosophy with recording, where pre-90s, you needed to have a band together and you needed to come write your songs and go out and play. And then somebody would go, hey, we like you, come into the studio, and then you can record in our studio, which is expensive. Whereas like, I think anytime from like the 4-track cassette recorder times onwards, people were like, well, I can kind of do this at home. And if anything, it becomes like an aesthetic, like an Elliott Smith type or whatever, where you have that sound, that is your sound. In fact, one of my favorite albums that I've heard from Nakedly Examined Music this year was Chris Church has that 4-track sound, that sort of cassette sound. There was a couple of the songs. In fact, the main one was Angel Be Mine, which I think was your pick of his songs, which was absolutely great. So, I mean, you know, anyone like that who's like, I can record at home, is going to have that ethos and mentality. But I think, like you said, it's an age thing potentially.
So when I, yes, of course, if I'm going to record at home. And insofar as I'm doing that, I'm using my DAW, I'm using Cubase. I have to, every time I get a new computer, I have to like refigure out like what, first time, it's never the same plugins.
Right.
You know, so I'll import something that, you know, where I recorded 10 years ago and like none of the reverbs work. None of the, you know, I've bought new stuff. So I have to relearn stuff from scratch. So I haven't gotten to the point of like being able to remix in an easy way myself. So with SoundForge, right, I just literally do destructive editing on each of the sides. And this is what I do when I like record an ad even right now. And I can do it very fast because I use presets that I'm just like, oh, apply normalization. Okay, now it's approximately the right level. Now apply the default compression, which will get it up. And now I'll inch the volume down a little bit. There, it's done. And then I can, you know, I can compare the two sides, my voice versus the other person's voice. And then I paste them on top of each other, basically, so that one, you know, so we have some stereo spread. And it's a very quick thing, and probably what I will do with this one, just so we can get it up quicker. That ironically, I'm not asking you to edit the one that you were speaking on. But didn't want to do that with Nakedly Examined Music, just because of all the, for a while I was doing, even when I was having the editor do the, putting the voices together, I would still insert the songs myself. But the way that you're doing it, actually doing it in the DAW, well, you can have a little overlap between the clips, and you know, that's nice.
A little bit of fading here and there. Yeah.
Yes. It was good that I wasn't doing that before, if half of them were going to be things that I would have to fix. Like, okay, that's not exactly the point I wanted to emphasize. Let me go back. Or I forget if we've talked about this. There are some things that I think maybe I've settled down so that anything that I want as a clip, I actually announce to the guest, like, here's a clip. And then I actually play it on my phone through the microphone to them, which just actually started working because I just figured out how to use the Zoom audio for musicians. That normally it applies this noise reduction. And so I had a thing. You didn't, Chris Stamey, were you working on it that far back?
No, that was a little before my time.
Okay. So he wanted to like walk through a whole song that he was going to play on piano, but he just had his like vocal mic and he wanted to, you know, show me this chord and this chord, and Zoom was not having any of it.
Mm-mm.
I could not hear anything that he, so it would say sort of the beginning of the note and then it would cut off and then he would say something. So I had to go back and try to figure out just from what he was saying and what little I could hear and cut and paste the pieces from his song, his recorded version. Hopefully I did it right. He never got back to me to say this was messed up, but I think he was a little disgusted by the limitations of the technology.
I mean, it is crazy that the Zoom has only just introduced this musician audio for musicians thing. It's crazy that's a new thing. You would have thought that would have been around for ages. But I definitely think, because you've started doing this recently, I don't think we include it in the show final, but I'll hear it in the raw audio, is you'll say to somebody, like, yes, you're saying, like, okay, let's listen to the chorus of this part so we can comment on it. You know, here it is. And you'll play it through the mic to them and to yourself to remind you. I think yes, it does a lot of favors for them as well, because if they haven't heard this song in 20 years or something, or they don't listen to their records all the time, like, they'll go, oh, sure, yeah, I remember. And it kind of triggers the memory for them, like, on an audio level. So I think it's really good for the conversation and like reminding them, because yeah, I think people maybe get to a point where they go, yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I don't quite remember the actual audio of like how it sounds.
Yes, ideally, you know, I have some back and forth sometimes with the person directly, and if I'm lucky they'll pick the songs, but often it is with their promo person. And they just don't even know what I'm looking for. I've got a couple promo people that I use a lot. So they know the drill. They know how to ask their guests, like, okay, it's one new one, it's one old one, it's something in between. So the guests can just kind of slot in something. But if you just say three songs from your career, oh, but there's also a fourth one. Oh, but there's also a little music at the beginning. They don't know what to do with that. So I end up often picking the songs and I encourage them to review them. But some of them do not. So let's start getting a little specific. Eric Anderson, had you heard of this fellow before from September?
I had not. Really enjoyed his episode, but I hadn't heard of him at all. Yeah, how did you know about him?
It was on a collection of folk music from the 60s. So Dylan, Pete Seeger, and Eric Anderson was one of these guys. So I sort of knew his name. And then it was Willie Nile was one of the guys this year that was pitched to me by Howard Wolfing, one of the, you know, who's the, one of the guys I use most often, one of the promo guys. And Willie Nile had, they mentioned in his bio how he was on a major label for the first couple albums, and then he got and he got all this praise and, you know, opened for The Who or something, you know, crazy stuff like that. But then got disillusioned and went to Europe and was opening for Eric Anderson. So like, oh, I was reminded of this guy. So I just emailed through the website, and Eric has somebody that is representing him who maybe is a relative, maybe he's a fan. The website looks like has not been updated in a long time. But I was, you know, interested to talk to this guy, somebody who is a first generation folkie, and such an interesting guy and such an interesting catalog. And it was, you know, a lot of albums to get through. But then he just had, it was a really hard interview because he had no memory of anything apparently, or no opinions about like, oh, I just grabbed these songs out of the air. You know, I've had other guests like this, but it just makes it especially challenging to figure out like, well, what do you want to talk about?
Exactly. Like, yeah, I did notice that actually, like, but you always do a really good job of like navigating them towards like, okay, well, I know you don't know about this one, but like, let's try and talk about at least your philosophy of like why you're doing a certain thing melodically or structurally or whatever, you know.
Or at the very least, you know, talk about where you were living at the time. I think this guy even you know, was it was like, okay, this was a relationship song, like, what? Well, okay, so tell me more about, like, obviously did not want to say anything about his personal life. So like, okay, you don't want to talk about the music specifically, you know, what about the arrangement? Well, you know, whoever's around plays on it. Okay,
it makes you wonder, like, did their PR person or whatever like say, hey, look, you should do some promo? They were like, and then they kind of end up on various podcasts and they're like, okay, well, now I'm here. I'm not quite sure what to say. You know, I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, maybe the promo person relation. I've kind of wanted to do one of these topic area, Nakedly Examined Music / Pretty Much Pop episodes, just talking to my promo people. And I've had a couple of them that have said yes to that, but not enough of them to like get three of them. And I always like to have a woman if possible, especially because I, you know, a good number of the promo people I work with are women, but like if they don't want to put themselves out there and like, oh no, I'm promoting my, you know, my artist, which is strange to me because usually if you get into promo, it's because you're a musician. Like, of course, why would you be doing this unless you kind of had some ambition for the stage yourself anyway? So I haven't done that yet, but I'm very interested in the, like, to what extent do they let me communicate with the person at all? Like, oh, this is a big star and they're paying me to separate, you know, we wouldn't want their email to be out there in the world. And it's definitely very different for, I think, female artists who are probably used to being stalked. Like, they want to have a greater separation between themselves and randos like me. So that, you know, so that I always try to push for, can I just like have a little email engagement before we actually do it with this person? But, you know, that usually doesn't happen. And so often, yes, they're probably just, okay, I've got a booking for you. Here's an interview. And I always suggest like, here's an interview with somebody who's kind of like you might want to listen to, get a sense of the format. The format's a little weird, especially for philosophy versus improv.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have to listen to one of those. If you just come on,
yeah,
you're just not even going to know what this thing is or what we're trying to make you do, which is
one of my laugh out loud moments. And honestly, again, not blown smoke, there's been quite a few during editing your various shows. One of them you were talking about, you had a philosopher guy on, like an actual like academic guy on Philosophy versus Improv some time ago, again, before my time. And every time you went into an improv scene, he'd be like, he'd just carry on talking about what he was talking about before. I was just cracking it up, like, oh my God, like just the idea of someone not knowing you're in an improv scene on the PVI show. It's just crazy.
Yes, I think I know which guy you're talking about.
I can't remember any names, and I wouldn't say them if I knew, but
yeah, probably good not to point them out. Again, no shame on Eric Anderson, who's an elderly gentleman who, you know, has earned whatever work he doesn't want to do. Like, that's cool. I'm just honored to be talking to some of these guys. But it is a big difference between, yeah, so there's kind of a mix now between people that their people reach out to me, or maybe they're just like a few of them more listeners of the show, Jonathan Rundman.
Oh, yeah.
So like, and then Jonathan Rundman went on to lay down a mandolin for a track for my new album. Like,
oh, that's great.
That's ideal that they don't see themselves as like, you know, I'm helping them out. for nothing, for they don't have to pay me for this publicity. So like they actually appreciate that and, you know, treat me like a human being. And so that's always nice. Mm. Not, you know, the more famous people are definitely, for the most part, very nice and appreciative, like to be getting, if they didn't appreciate the attention, they wouldn't do the show, right? There are plenty of more famous people that simply won't do the show. And it's a matter, yeah, so like him and Marshall Crenshaw, I think, was somebody that was, I'm on a list. It's maybe not somebody that, a promo person that I often respond to, but I believe that was somebody that reached out, you know, at least with an ad to me so that I had a human being to follow up with. But some of them, like Eric Anderson, are just, I just look at their website and yeah, Richard Thompson, some of my best ones are just either me through the website or through a friend of theirs. Mm. Like, hey, you are on the show. I see you've had this guy in your Wesley Stace is a great guy from a couple of years ago who runs these regular shows featuring other singer-songwriters. And so I was able to get, some of the names. Loudon Wainwright III. Was that a little before your time? Yeah. Okay, so that was about a year ago. Do you remember what the first one you did for me was for music? Oh, gosh. Any idea?
I want to say it was either Ian Matthews or Django Haskins. Because I think I've been editing them for the show for about a year, maybe a little more.
Yeah, so Loudon Wainwright III was right before Ian Matthews. And I think I remember getting the Ian Matthews files from you. So yeah, that was probably the first one. Another super fascinating guy. I definitely didn't reach out to that guy directly. I think that was the promo person reaching out to me. But it is, I do have sort of a bucket list of people. And ideally, I should just be mining that bucket list so constantly that I have no room for anybody else. Because at least, you know, if I try five people, one of them will say yes. But it's been nice the last year that I've gotten a little more lazy, a little more busy. I have too many things going on. So I'm not spending so much of my day just like trying to get another person. I had, some of them, again, I'm like on a list, you know, so they were sending me, there's a new thing by Men at Work, you know, which is some sort of retrospective. So I tried for a while to get Colin Hay from that. And then I saw he appeared on, you know, my buddy's podcast. Oh. Like, okay, so clearly you do podcasts. You just didn't want to do my podcast. So I don't know what's going on with that. But there's plenty of people like that, or even ones that, you know, maybe even are scheduled. And then we approach the time and then somebody realizes like, yeah, maybe... maybe this is not a good fit. Maybe I don't know what the reasons always are, but you know, if I've spent a significant amount of time listening through somebody's catalog, you know, if they're really famous, I'll still be like, well, it was nice listening through the catalog. I'm not mad at you.
Exactly. But... I mean, when you have somebody on the show, do you listen to their like their entire discography or like do you just cherry pick? Like, how do you do that?
I try to do their entire discography of things that they have written. So Ian Matthews is one who has a million albums, but half of them are like half covers or something. So I will skip all the covers or, you know, if there's a really famous cover or something, you know, that I feel like I should know that is central to understanding them as a person. But yeah, that was another one. So my most recent one that I've posted as we're talking is Corey Lede, his Zydeco stuff. Like, do I have to listen to all the Zydeco albums? I think I ended up doing so. But they kind of ran together. You know, there's definitely a difference between just sort of getting through somebody's catalog and getting through it in a way that I would as a fan, where I actually can like pick out songs and remember them. So when I did the Melvins, that's probably before your time. Dale Crover from the Melvins it was September 2024. That was a band that I heard a lot about. I didn't know anything about. Luckily, Dale is not the main songwriter in that band. So, you know, I could just pick the songs that he wrote, but they had a lot of stuff. And I kind of wanted to listen to them enough because I was feeling like I was a fan of this. And I felt a little bit that with Ian Matthews as well. Like, I really like some of this stuff. So let me at least pick a couple albums to listen to like three times so I can actually identify. So it doesn't just all. Yeah, it was I've gone to see some of these people live a few years after I interviewed them. Wesley Stace being one of them. I just saw him last month and I didn't know a single song. I knew like two of the songs he played. Like, I should have prepared at least a little. He was even taking requests and I was like, I don't remember the names of any songs. I've listened to everything this guy puts out. I admire the heck out of him, but yet I'm so stretched, you know, it's on to the next guest.
Of course. I mean, that's kind of like part of the reason I ask is because you have, you know, you put out multiple episodes. There's so much music to listen to digest, that I imagine, yeah, this is just a lot to remember. And I think you can be forgiven not requesting a song in that instance.
Any standouts from your tenure here so far that you felt like was, you know, something that's really stuck with you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Bill Champlin was one of my favorite guests, episodes, musicians, absolutely great, particularly the Sons of Champlin stuff. Like, I think one of the songs that was picked for that episode was Right On, and that's just like in my Spotify playlist. I've listened to that all the time. That whole album, that whole Sons of Champlin album is so cool. Like, I'm not really a big like prog listener. And I wouldn't even call it prog necessarily, but it evolves. You know, it's not just a kind of verse, chorus pop song structure, which is kind of my favorite type of thing. But I think Sons of Champlin did that really well. Sonically recorded super nicely. Again, I've mentioned it before, but Chris Church was a fantastic guest. He was just really...
Yep. That was just somebody that was connected through Facebook.
Really?
Like, he didn't approach me. His promo people didn't approach me, but I had some people that played on his album. So it was just sort of a networking thing that like, okay, I become Facebook friends with them. I hear enough of their stuff. Like, okay, I really like this.
That's ideal.
And he was super nice.
That's so cool. I mean, I guess that's a big part of the way guests happen really, isn't it? It's just kind of like, oh, you know this person. I know that after the recordings of some episodes, you'll say to somebody, hey, look, do you have any friends or any people you know who would like be interested in doing this type of breakdown? You know, I think that's a really cool question to ask.
Yes, you get to hear that. And I try to make notes of that on my the notes documents that I share with you, and I share with Patreon people. Not that there's too many Patreon people that see these, but I will put little everybody that has been recommended. The amount of times I actually follow up on that is not that heavy. It's usually like if it's somebody that I've heard before. But yeah, there are definitely times when, I should be getting some more guests. Let me look through the old notes documents and see who's recommended who, or I will misrecommend. Yes. So I email somebody like, hey, I think you mentioned knowing this guy. Do you want to connect us? He's like, I don't know this. Oops. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I had a specific Prague PR person, Billy James from Glass Onion PR, and he was actually a guest on the show, and he died within the last 2 years. So I guess somebody is still running it, and I've gotten maybe one or two emails from them, but that was my font for a lot of my early guests and a lot of these 70-year-old British guys. Or, you know, he had Frank Zappa alums play on his solo album. This Billy did. So he had a lot of contacts in that. The Howard Wolfing is more centered in the New York punk scene. He's a New York resident. And so the punk and the post-punk, and like, so he's giving me most of my guys. Robert Vickers is another one who is actually a member of the Go-Betweens, Australian band. And he is kind of a diverse list, but usually sort a little lesser known singer-songwriter types, but always really good that he connects me with. Yeah. Other than that, there are just a bunch of often women that, you know, I'll get one country singer here or somebody, you know, so I'm on some lists that they're not necessarily reaching out to me and saying, hey, do you want to interview this person? It's more that I see their ad and then I respond to it. And like, and sometimes I get responses and sometimes I don't.
That makes sense.
Like, why am I on this list if you're not going to respond when I want an interview?
Yeah, like it kind of defeats the purpose of it entirely. How about John Kruth? How did that come about? I thought his episode was fantastic.
That was another Facebook friend of friends. He's played on a lot of stuff. Yeah, I should say, Bill Champlin, I think I just reached out to him independently. And he was very like, you know, because he's maybe not now super famous, but like he was very super famous for a while. And was very much like, I was, you know, if you can record yourself or you can pick songs. And he's kind of like straight out, like, basically, if I have to do anything, then I don't want to do this interview. So I was like, oh, no, you don't have to do anything. Just talk to me. You don't have to listen to my show. It's okay. We're Kruth, though, was a very personable guy. And I think he listened to a bunch of my episodes. He might be a fan of the show. Yeah, but I'm on the lookout. Like Corey Ledet, who is from... he was a Howard guy, so not New York punk scene, but New Orleans. There's a, you know, I guess it's the same with these promo people. It's friends of their other clients will become their clients. So they make inroads geographically. Yeah, like Vickers has a lot of people from Portland, Oregon. So I've talked to a number of people from the Portland scene, which is nice. Yeah, people that have play a different instrument. So crew, you know, if I can if I can talk to somebody about harmonium, or I can talk to them about mandola, some instrument that I've never played before, a style. So yeah, you haven't probably started editing yet. I just prior to this talked to somebody that just reached out to me independently, who is sort of a kind of a heavy metal solo guitarist that just writes these instrumentals for himself. And so, you know, he was very articulate and a little nerdy about his craft, you know, as a fan of the show. but we also, I don't get a lot of metal people. So just talking about like presenting as a metal, as a long-haired metal person, and what kind of shows you do, what kind of groups you get lumped with, the sociological stuff is interesting to me. So that's yeah, some of the people that are not so interested about talking about their music, you can get them to talk about the scene.
I completely get that. I think that's a really interesting thing about your approach, is that you're not like, I'll only have people on whose genre I fully understand. You know, you having had Corey Ledeon with Zydeco, Adrian Sherwood with like the kind of dub type of stuff. And the other big standout for me again was John Kruth with the sort of multi-instrumental. He plays mandola, he plays mandocello, he plays all these different things. Like all of these must be like massive learning, just learning experiences for you. They certainly are for me. I mean, I took away loads of stuff from, you know, the John Kruth one. I restrung my mandolin, which I had been like, you know, bare, not strung up for years. And I was like, okay, let me try this again with the dub stuff. I don't have tape machines or anything like that, but I was like recording some reverb and then just digitally reversing it just because of that. Just, it was just interesting to me. So, I mean, you must take so much stuff away from these interviews like that.
I mean, how much I actually put into practice, clearly, I'm not practicing that much now, and I'm less ambitious in my own recording than I was in the past. Yeah, talking to like Jorma Kaukonen, like I should be able to do finger picking with my thumb. I've never really been able. I have my own finger picking style, but it's not the hold the bass down with your thumb while you do stuff. You know, so at least I messed around with that. I still can't do it. I still don't. You know, unless I have a song where I do that. You know, exactly that kind of thing. Then it's not going to really sink in. But, you know, I spent some time on YouTube screwing around with that, trying to be better at that. I mean, I'm often just impressed by and envious of the work ethics of these people that like, okay, I have the equipment. I would have killed when I was 19 to have the technology that I have available now, and even the free time that if I wanted to. But I just am not necessarily constantly in that mode that I'll get, okay, I've booked some studio time to mix, and now my life is full of recording music for a while. All right, this is probably not an interesting topic for people. So back to, yes, any other, so Jorma Kaukonen was one, you know, I knew about Jefferson Airplane. I didn't know about him specifically. I didn't know that, you know, the mass of his stuff had nothing to do with Jefferson Airplane. It was a completely different style that he had developed himself. So that was interesting. And he was another one that, even though he had a million albums, three quarters of the stuff is covers. So I could just skip a lot of those.
So, right, sure. So you're only interested in like the stuff people have written then, like original compositions from that artist.
I mean, that is the point of the podcast. But I've had guests, you know, I've had producer guests. And maybe one of the songs is something that is not theirs at all, but it's something they were a producer for, just so I can see what kind of stuff you do as a producer. What, you know, somebody, John Chanel, I believe is his name, who is the string arranger for Tori Amos. And he'd written a lot of stuff as well. So we talked about his own things that he had written for the Bangles and that he had released himself. But he, you know, that's not a name. John Philip Chanel, that's it. So, but I'm sure you don't recognize that name.
No, right. No, I don't.
Yeah, and there's no reason you would, because the stuff that he's most famous for is little tinkling that he did on other people's stuff. But I like the Violent Femmes a lot. I very doubt that Gordon Gano, the lead singer of the Violent Femmes, will ever come on the show. John Kruth just told me that. He played with Violent Femmes.
Oh, sure.
But I've had their drummer for their popular period, who's gone on to do a lot of solo stuff. And John was going to connect me, I have yet to make this happen, with the bass player for Violent Femmes, who also has some solo stuff. But I think that what he does with the Violent Femmes is so characteristic. Like if you think of added up, you know, it's those bass lines that if he's not getting songwriting credit for it, he should. So,
right.
Yeah, I had Elvis Costello's bassist on Bruce Thomas. Okay. And we had to, you know, play like clips from some Elvis. He really hasn't released a lot of stuff that he has writing credit for. But like, this is a really talented, famous person, and I want to talk to him. So it was like, let's play some lines from Elvis Costello songs. And like, how did you come up with that line? And I still regard that as composition.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, you know, there's a litany of examples of where the bass or drums of a song can make a world's difference to a recording. And yeah, I think it's compositional, absolutely. I mean, maybe not in the eyes of like copyright law or whatever. You know, you can get to a point where it's just the lyric writer and the chord writer or whatever. But I agree with you on an artistic level. It's really interesting to be like, what made you come up with that bass line? How did that work in the context of the song? That's great stuff. I love that.
Yeah, it's always a little different. If I'm talking about the lyrics of somebody and sort of their approach, what kind of speech act is this? It's a kind of philosophy imported question. You know, who is this aimed at? What kind of theater are you evoking? So Dean Wareham, somebody from Luna Galaxy 500 that I've had last April, was somebody that I could identify with a lot, that I feel like he doesn't do anything too complicated instrumentally. He's not, you know, he has tasteful, cool arrangements, but not like, I don't even know how you did this. You had to have gone to music school to do this, and I don't know what this is. Whereas Bill Champlin, I regard as more of like a being on a higher level, like that he's so talented just in his vocal style, in his keyboard playing, in what he's, you know, compositionally, I find some of his choices a little questionable. That, you know, I feel like he did those giant 80s power ballads and he has not shaken that. So that's probably a foreign thing to you at your age, that you did not grow up with these things, or has 80s rock become the default classic rock now, so you know it just as well as anything else?
Well, maybe I'm a unique example for somebody of my age. I'm not like some spring chicken. I'm 33, but like, I remember my mum would always buy me these, like, when I was like 10 or 11 or something, these like best of the 80s, you know, love ballads or something, which is a strange choice to buy your son, but whatever. And you know, so I grew up on all that stuff, you know, Journey and the Bon Jovi ballads and what have you, you know, REO Speedwagon and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, 80s stuff isn't my favorite kind of genre, but the Champlin stuff was, I mean, he's just a master of that stuff, right? You know. Those kind of giant chords and like weaving in some jazz chords into something that is ostensibly just pop music, but you know, very cleverly written. Now he was great. It's just really, really good. Another guy I kind of put on that level as well is J.R. Robinson from the, yes, I think, March episode, one of the March episodes. He was just so good, just really knew his craft. And again, there's some musicians, kind of to your point of like, they're so up there, so talented. They're like, you know, I'll look at them and I'll go, I feel like I don't even play music when I'm listening to somebody talk exactly like that. You know what I mean?
That punk told us like anybody can do this. And that was so inspirational, you know, but it does mean that you're sort of selling things based on your personality and your, rather than your licks, than the amount of hours you put into your instrument.
That's a really good point. And I like that you have both ends of that gambit. You know, you have people who, you know, are very straightforward and just kind of like, here's my production. You can kind of hear everything laid out. And then people, you know, like Champlin and like JR, who are like so complicated.
And I'd like to do more. Again, it depends how active I am in seeking out guests. Like, I'd like to have more rap guys on. I've had very few rap, well, let alone rap women. Like, I've never had a rap woman on. But I don't know how to find them. I don't know how to find like mid-level. Like, I know how to, okay, I know who's really famous, but they're not going to be on my show. You know, so what's the right level of mediocrity? You know, or that's not the right word, because, you know, I really like these artists, but they, you know, who will actually be at a career point where they would find this a useful thing, especially if they look at my back catalog and they don't see a bunch of other rappers. Like, well, then why would they want to do, you know, because they know it's just going to be like some white guy that doesn't understand what they what they're doing. So it's definitely dabbling, you know. If I've had, you know, one Indian sitar slash violin player, but like not a, a bunch of those. Yah Wobble. Oh, you weren't. That was a little before your time, too.
Oh, from so Pill.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So he was August 2024, I see. Actually, he spent a lot of time in China, and his current wife is a Chinese musician. So, in fact, his kids then, with that, you know, play these super Chinese pop things with a lot of skill to them. Yes, these are all areas that I find fascinating, but I probably until you get past, until I interview like six people in one area, then I'm not going to feel like I'm actually... I'm not being a tourist.
Exactly. I think there is an upside to being a tourist in the sense of like, I mean, you know, the Corey Ledet episode's a perfect example of like, I hadn't heard Zydeco, period, before that episode. Mm. So that was a learning thing for me. And I'm sure it was for you too. I mean, you're probably more familiar with it than I am, but just being like, let me learn, you know, even as the host, as the person asking the questions to the guests, being like, how does this work compared to what I'm used to? Because you're almost being the mouthpiece for the listener at home as well of like, I want to understand this new genre. It is a little bit of musical tourism, and I think there's a real upside to that.
Well, one of the things that I'm more comfortable with is jangle pop.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that's what you play. So let's finish off here by introducing the full song that folks are going to hear from you. Tell us about the song.
So we'll go with Hopefully. Hopefully is a song. I do love the jangle pop stuff. I really do. This is more of a ballad, kind of like an acoustic nylon string ballad. Maybe a la, I don't know, Cat Stevens' Softer Side, something like that. And it's a song I wrote about my sister and me being awake at night, hoping that she's getting sleep, and the kind of irony in that, like I'm up kind of worrying, hoping that she's not. That sort of thing. So it's kind of like painting a picture of that. I play the strings on this song and all I have is a cello, and I just multi-track the cello parts, and then I very speed down Logic, so it's like 30% down or something, and then I play the parts really slowly so that when you very speed back up, you have quote-unquote violins. So that's what I did on this song. And
so you're changing the pitch or just the speed?
Well, both, kind of. You're changing the formant and the pitch, so that
okay,
it's like the Frank Zappa thing. That's who I stole it, and also Beatles as well. Like in my life, like the harpsichord.
Well, sure.
Solo
I used to use a cassette four track, and you just turn the knob.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then, yeah, you have to write in a different key. I just thought digitally, there's probably a way that you can actually play it in the intended key, but just slow it down without changing the bitrate or something.
There is, but then you get all these weird artifacts. It's like, it's like, it sounds really weird. But if you do the kind of the quote unquote tape thing and you emulate it so it goes down, you have to play it in a different key, or at least an octave down if you do a full 50% down. But when you get it back up, it has that nice smooth quality that you're after. So that was the strings on that one. But yeah, hopefully. And it's going to be on an album I'm putting out at the end of the month called Upward Spiral, which I'm still currently recording, which is terrible because it comes out in like 2 weeks. But we're going to get there.
No pressure.
I always do this to myself. But yeah, so it's Hopefully. And it's been great chatting with you, Mark. Really.
All right. Great meeting you. Thanks for all your work on this and last year.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
She's sleeping like she's supposed to be, but I can't shake the feeling that she's not. And hopefully she'll see what everyone else can see when she can see outside. Sleep. I can't shake the feeling that she's lost. Oh, Rosemary, hopefully you'll see what everyone else can see when you
Thanks so much to Roger. You can find all his music at rogerheathers.bandcamp.com. And that new album, Upward Spiral, is supposed to release on January 9th. You can look up the Weekly Song podcast on any of your favorite podcast platforms. I see it's been going since 2017, almost as long as Nakedly Examined Music. I see they have nearly 200 episodes. Again, find out more about this podcast at nakedlyexaminedmusic.com or support the effort at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. If you haven't heard some of my other shows, you might want to check those out. Philosophy versus Improv is my sort of experimental comedy slash philosophy tutorial show, which, though I didn't want to put him on the spot on the air, I did talk to Roger after this recording, and he thinks it's very funny. Tyler always thought it was the most fun show to edit. Maybe you should check it out, too. Also, Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, making sense of TV and movies and occasionally other things, in a way that I think it doesn't matter if you're already a fan of that thing or have seen it, because we consider it sort of as this type of genre. What does it mean that people are entertained by this type of media? So, for instance, on our Halloween episode this year, we really got into gross horror stuff, which I think you'd find the conversation fascinating, even if you yourself would never want to see any of that. Finally, The Partially Examined Life, and I should clarify that Roger is not my main episode Partially Examined Life editor. I didn't want to put all my eggs into one basket, so I use a different service for that. But Roger does edit if we have supporter material, if we have a one-hour episode, and Roger does that. And he also does Wes's subtext podcast. For my next Nakedly Examined Music episode, you heard me describe my interview with the instrumental metal guitarist Darren Michael Boyd. So likewise, even if you're not a fan of heavy metal instrumentals, this guy is really interesting. And I should say the music is very melodic, very expressive. It is not a metal sludge or anything like that. Per usual, I have cool guests lined up, three of them already on the calendar going forward. There was one rather famous guest I was supposed to be talking to this week that pushed things off until March. So it's good I don't tell you what these things are in advance and raise your hopes. But trust me, you should definitely subscribe directly to the podcast, say if you're listening to this on the Partially Examined Life feed. And if you don't want to hear all these god-awful commercials, please, 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 we need more Patreon supporters for this podcast and any of my other podcasts. I did some end-of-year financials, and I'm happy to say that with all these ads, we are at least breaking even with all of the supplementary podcasts, with me getting a little bit, right? If we start to go too far into debt to Partially Examined Life and that pool of money, then some of these shows are not going to continue. So we're doing okay. Things will keep going, but barely. We could really use your help. Again, patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. Or if you're listening through Apple Podcasts right now, there should be a subscribe button that will say, hey, do you want to pay $5 a month and support all three of these podcasts? Nakedly Examined Music, Pretty Much Pop, and Philosophy versus Improv. If you click that button, then you'll get the ad-free versions of all of those and some bonus stuff, more on other podcasts than on this podcast. So that is the low-effort way of supporting, since there is absolutely nothing to configure. Your feeds just magically change to the ad-free versions. However, then Apple does not share your identity with me. I can't thank you. You don't get the special notes documents that I post on Patreon. And frankly, Apple takes more of a cut, so I would much rather you support me in all three places on Patreon, and that could be for as little as like $1 an episode or $1 a month, depending on how the page is set up. But wait, there's more to announce. I am teaching a philosophy course online again this spring, starting in mid-January. It's going to be my Big Books in Continental Philosophy class, so Hegel, Heidegger, Hannah Arendt, Jean-Paul Sartre, and more. It's a very low pressure environment. No papers, no grades. If you're a fan of my philosophy work or just curious, go check out partiallyexaminedlife.com/class. And finally, I am planning on doing a post on my Substack. That's marklintzenmeyer.substack.com. So you can find out what I'm working on for all my various podcasts, get updates on my teaching, my music, and whatever else I want to say there. Hope you all have a great rest of your day, great holiday season. Keep on musicking. Till next time, this is Mark Lintonmeyer signing off.